What can the history of hairdos tell us about everyday Irish women's lives? How do fashion and beauty standards reflect broader societal issues of a time and place? There are just some of these questions my next guest has been trying to answer. Historian in residence in Dublin City Council joins me in the studio now, Katie Blackwood.
Hello, hi.
Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
We were just chewing the fat there, weren't we there? Just having a laugh. Tell me this now. Historian in residence, I've never actually heard of that role in Dublin City Council. So tell us about
it. Oh, have you not?
No.
Okay. Well, yeah, so there's 6 historians in residence. Oh. So we all have a different area around the city.
Like a geographical area?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, a different geographical area. And there's a children's historian as well. She works across the whole city.
Nice.
And so what we do is, I suppose we're trying to, like, engage the public and different communities in history. So, like, we would do research on particular areas and we would give talks and workshops. But yeah, we're just trying to, and we try and interest people in kind of the collections, the archival collections that they'd have in Dublin City libraries and archives. And we're just trying to get people to sort of engage with the history of the city and feel connected to the history of the city.
Well. So you have lovely hair, by the way, just
Thank
to say.
You.
I have a natural skill. I can tell when someone's had their hair cut. I can actually tell. It's really weird because I was a hairdresser.
Okay, yeah.
My mom was a hairdresser, and so I washed hair and folded towels and swept up. The smell of perm lotion reminds me of Christmas. You know, I'm from that generation. And you chose to go with the history of hairstyles.
Yeah.
To chart, I suppose, largely female history of the city. So, why hair?
Okay, why hair? Well, it's okay. So I suppose hairstyles are, you know, they're really interesting, I think. It's a bit like fashion, you know, they're like hairstyles follow fashion and it's connected to fashion, but then it's also part of our physical bodies as well, you know.
Yeah.
And like, obviously, you're born with whatever type of hair you have, your colour, your texture, that kind of thing, but you can change it.
You've just pointed out something that's very obvious, but we don't think about it. And especially from my other job that I do, is that they call me Brendan Hates the Hair Courtney. Every time I'm on a shoot, I'm really fussy with the hair. It's so intimate because it's connected to us. It's a piece of fashion that we wear and we sleep in and we can never take off. So it's really interesting.
Yeah.
And also, it is very intrinsically connected to trend, isn't it?
Oh, completely, completely. And like, I suppose that's what this, you know, this research that I'm doing now and this talk that I'm giving, it's about sort of like, what are the ideas that different hairstyles are saying, you know, because your hair and your clothes do, you know, mean things, like they're sending out signals. I guess I was just interested in kind of looking at, you know, the sort of social and political things that are going on, and then seeing what kind of hairstyles people were wearing. And, you know, because sometimes hairstyles might be protesting against something. Sometimes they're conforming to whatever the norms are.
It's kind of like the adage in fashion, as economic times improve, skirt hem lengths go shorter.
Mm.
And as they get dour, the skirt lengths come down. This is a very clunky version of it. But so how far back did you go? What's your starting point?
So I started at 1900.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good one.
Kind of the Edwardian period.
And lots of imagery.
Loads of imagery.
Yeah.
Yeah, loads of imagery. And like really interesting and, you know, quite like different to now. So like in the 1900s, the early 1900s, long hair was very much in fashion. So a lot of women would have had long, long, long hair, but they would have worn it up. So, you know, you'd have like there was a few different styles. So you'd have like there was one which was based, it would have been an international style. So it wouldn't have just been in Ireland, but it was called the Gibson Girl, which was based on this illustrator. He used to draw these pictures of these, you know, beautiful girls. But they were sort of this cloud hairstyle.
I'm thinking, like, am I thinking upstairs, downstairs kind of? Sort of Victoriana.
It's like sort of puffed out with a bun then on top. And then you would have had, say, people that were, you know, very well-to-do, you know, might have had ladies' maids to do their hair, and they would have spent, you know, there would have been big, elaborate hairstyles. They might have been wearing shells or ribbons.
Are we talking Downton Abbey kind of thing?
Yeah, like, I guess. Well, Downton Abbey goes up through the whole period, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But like big elaborate updos, but like they might have been plaited, but then people would have worn hair pieces as well. And there was these curly fringes were kind of quite fashionable
for a while.
Queen Alexandra, she used to wear it apparently. So she was like the trendsetter of
the time.
So back
then, did your hairstyle very much state your class? Or your wealth, say, for example.
Yeah, well, definitely if you had the time to spend on a hairstyle that, you know, most people wouldn't have had the time to spend on, and you needed other people to do it as well. You know, you would have needed other people to put bits in, and especially if you were wearing those hair pieces, which, like, they were like pastiches, sometimes they're called. So they would have been made from human hair.
Okay.
So you would have had to get them made.
So you'd have to basically be a bit wealthy then.
Yeah, yeah.
So what were definitely the average, you know, working class women, what was their hair like?
I'd say it was a mix. I'd say it was probably like, you know, like you'd probably just have a lot of people who let have their hair.
Yeah.
But then people would have put their hair up, because if they were working, doing something, you know, doing some sort of work, you'd need to have your hair out of your way. So up and in a bun was like the big
So style. I'm reading here, you were reading the Disembodiment Body, you were reading Emma DeBarry's book.
Oh yeah.
Disobedient Bodies, brilliant book.
Yeah. Brilliant.
And that was a big inspiration to you. Tell me why.
Yeah, that was kind of what kicked off the whole thing. I just think she's really interesting, and she was talking about how, I suppose, you know, beauty practices and women's culture can often be sort of trivialised.
Very much so.
And, you know, things like fashion or hair or whatever it might be. It's like the idea is, and especially in history, which is kind of like a, you know, a worthy topic a lot of the time, that it's maybe not really that important. But I would argue, and like Emma DeBarry argues, that actually it's really intrinsic to, you know, who we are as human beings, the way we do our hair.
Actually, you're just triggering something I'm thinking while you're talking. So there's you can tell me if it's true or if it's fake. Mm-hmm. So history is largely written from a man's point of view.
That's what they say, yeah.
That's what they say, right?
Yeah.
So this is a new opportunity to tell history from a maybe a wider gendered point of view.
Yeah. I mean, there's an idea in history that it's, you know, the great deeds of great men. so it's, you know, people who would have had power and opportunity who tended to be men, you know, usually. And the working class history, say, or women's history, or, you know, other types of history maybe haven't had the same press.
So you've started back in Edwardian. Take me up now through, just gently gloss me over the broad decades of trends that come up. So we went and then the 20s with the bob.
Yeah, 20s. Love the 20s. 20s is great. So in the 20s, you've got the bob, which is a radical change. So suddenly everyone's cutting their hair short. And again, a very democratic hairstyle. Anybody can do that, as long as you can get to the hairdressers.
On that, just before you move on, back then, nearly all hairdressers were men.
Yes.
That's really interesting. I didn't realise that. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so most hairdressers were men. So women didn't get their hair cut in public. Like, it was the type of thing that would happen at home in a private space. But there would have been barbers, say, who would have cut men's hair, and they would have had their own areas in the public. But then, you know, with the bob and like different hairstyles like that coming in, suddenly everyone needs to get their hair cut a lot more. So it makes sense to start cutting women's hair, because they're coming in all the time to get their hair cut.
If you go back to when women didn't go out to public areas to get their hair, was that to do with the oppression of women, ultimately? Because there was a lot of headscarves going on.
Yeah.
Which women had to wear scarves into churches.
Yeah.
And then I read here in a piece of your research that it was a judge who stopped wearing a headscarf in court, and she started stopping people wearing.
Yeah, Eileen Kennedy.
What
was that? Really interesting. So she was Ireland's first judge. So 1964.
Ireland's first female judge.
Yes, sorry. Yeah. Sorry, of course. Yeah. Female judge. Yeah. So 1964, she was appointed.
Okay.
And she was to the children's court. So she would have been hearing all the cases to do with, you know, any children committing crimes or any of the kind of care orders or anything like that. But up to that point, women in court had to cover their head. They had to. But she said, listen, I'm not going to wear the wig and I'm not wearing a hat. I'm not covering my hair, and I don't expect anyone else to do it either. So that kind of began the change then in the courts, that you didn't have to cover your hair anymore.
So it was quite a formality to covering your hair.
Yeah.
And if you look back at some of the pictures from up to the 40s, every single man was wearing a cap or a hat. And the cap meant you were a working man, and the hat, the bowler hat, meant that you were a white collar.
Okay, yeah.
It's really interesting. And I saw a picture of about 200 men on I don't know. I think without Guinness, and every single head is covered.
Yeah.
And I know it's not to do with hair, but the hair head coverings were huge, weren't they?
Yeah. And that's something that it's totally gone now.
Yeah.
Like, no one ever wears a hat anymore.
Only for weddings or for ladies or whatever like that. And men don't really wear hats.
Yeah.
Why were they wearing hats then? Was it for practical reasons, for heat?
I think there was a mixture of things. For women anyway, like some of it would be that you covered your hair. That was a sign that you were married. So a lot of women did that up until, you know, like the 70s, I guess. It was kind of up until then. And then there was...
And so just to, on that, just to be, we better tread carefully with this as well. But on that, I remember my mom had a hairdressing salon in Crumlin. And in between getting their hair done, women would wear the headscarf.
Yes.
Well, because that's the hair would be a bit flat by Thursday. Yeah.
To keep the hair. So especially if you had your rollers in or if you were getting a
set. So it was quite practical as well.
Yes, definitely. There was a practical side to it as well.
But it was also used as a cover.
Yeah.
I actually love when I see young women in headscarves sometimes, you know, with the 1950s kind of style done and the big skirts. Kind of cute. But then we have the bob never really goes away, right?
Not really. I mean, it does. It kind of comes in and out of fashion at different times. But like the bob is great because it was so different. You know, it was really associated with, you know, modernism and technology and sort of like new ideas. And, you know, you see it in Ireland, like, you know, the bob was here, even though Ireland in, say, the 20s and 30s was all about, you know, looking inward and, you know, looking to our ancient Celtic past and sort of, you know, establishing our identity as a nation in that kind of a way. But you still see the bob is in lots of different places. Like one of the first things that the Free State did when after, you know, we gained independence was they put on this festival called the Talchin Games, which was sort of like the Olympic Games. So it was a lot of different athletic competitions. There was a cultural aspect to it as well, but they had an opening ceremony in Croke Park, which was kind of like a pageant, and they had Queen Talcha, who the games were named after, and so they had somebody coming out, you know, playing her part, and the woman who was doing it had her hair in a bob, you know, which wouldn't have been the
traditional.
Would have
been really radical.
Yeah, well, I think it was the fashion, so it was like modern, you know.
Yeah.
So on the one hand, we want to be this modern country.
Who was Queen Talcha? I've never heard of her.
Oh, she was like an ancient
pagan.
Okay. Goddess, kind of queen, but she died and her funeral games were this like big, huge ceremony. And then they happened every year.
And then the 60s and 70s, and then everything just goes loose and long again.
Yeah. Well, I suppose.
And men wear long hair. That was the big change.
Yeah. That was, I suppose like the late 60s or 70s, that's when that sort of.
I love old footage of like sort of older men giving out about men with long hair. It's so funny. It's so bizarre to think that was a huge issue, wasn't it?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Because it's about, you know, gender roles and, you know, if there's very definite sort of gender roles and, you know, men are meant to look one way and women are meant to look another way, when you start messing with that, some people aren't going to like it. You know, it's going to cause anxiety amongst certain members of, you know.
So tell me, so what? How long does a trend, in your experience, now that you've done all this research from the Edwardian times, how long does a trend tend to last? And when does it move on? 20 years?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say I can only speak for the 20th century, but I think...
There's a phrase. I can only speak for the 20th century. Go on.
I think you tend to see them going like 10 to 20 years sort of, you know, but then some hairstyles don't last that long. Like the beehive is a great example of a really iconic hairstyle, but it was really only in fashion for a couple of years.
And it's very impractical.
So impractical.
I saw Pamela Anderson saying that Amy Winehouse and Lady Bunny both came to see her in a theatre show and they were both wearing beehives and half the audience couldn't see the show because they're beehives. So they are very practical. My sister had her beehive searched once. In the airport with a knitting pin.
Yeah. Oh my God.
She used to wear her hair really up. She thought she was great. Tell me this. I saw a young rugby guy playing, I think he was in England, playing in England, one of the matches. Don't ask me about rugby, but I actually just turned it on and I noticed he had this really short mullet.
Okay.
Crop sides and really short on top, like proper old school.
Like 80s.
80s mullet, but not long, but very thick and dense. So the mullet's big time back, isn't it?
I guess so, yeah. I mean.
So when they come back, what does that say? When trends, and you get to a certain age, you do see stuff coming back, don't
you? Yeah, true. Yeah, no, you absolutely do. And I suppose that happened then in the 60s with the bob, like it made a total reappearance again.
And Vidal Sassoon took all credit for it.
He did. So I like, you know, I suppose things come in waves, don't they? And yeah. I suppose both the 20s and the 60s were a time of sort of, you know,
revolution,
freedom,
yeah,
hedonism, you know, optimism.
And slightly anti-establishment.
Yeah.
There were party times. There were heady yes. times, right?
Yes.
So hair was practical.
I don't know what now in the 80s.
Yeah. What's the trend now?
God, I don't know. I don't know anything about now. Don't ask me that.
Do you know? Well, I think it's natural hair. I think it's glossy natural hair. And if you drive by, and there's a market research company in New York called Faith Popcorn, and they actually, the leading voices for trend are teenage girls.
Yeah. Do you know what I've noticed with teenage girls now? They do have their hair like really slicked back. Have you noticed that?
Yeah.
With a bow. Like
yes.
Quite a big bow.
The bows are in. The bows are back. The bows are. So you did a talk on this and you'd love to do more talks on it.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about how people can find out about the
bows. Yeah, well, I'm doing another talk in Coolock Library on the 20th of March.
Lovely.
So I'll be there. Come and see me running through the whole century. Well, up to the 60s maybe. And yeah, if people want to get in touch, they can email me. hairhistories@gmail.com, just if anyone has any stories, you know, because I'm interested in reaching out to the public and the community. So if anyone has any stories or images or anything that they think might be kind of relevant to the project.
It's fascinating. I absolutely love it. Katie Blackwood, thanks very much. I'm just getting a note here. Bows are back thanks to Rashida Adelecki.
Yes.
She had them, all the kids are wearing them, and that's totally true.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. It was fascinating. And we'll take a quick break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.